alone.
Okay, yeah. I assume that was a stunning, perfect impression of that one guy halfway through the film, Get Out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. If I can do Jodie Whittaker, I can do
Yeah, a flawless, perfect impression of that one guy.
Yeah, what's his name? I can't remember his name.
Is it Andre? Andre something
Andre,
or other?
Andre, yeah.
The character? I don't know what the actor's name is, but yeah.
Yeah, Andre. Yeah.
Good stuff. In case you couldn't tell, today we're talking about the film Get Out.
Yep.
But that's for in about 10 minutes' time.
Yeah.
Because before that, we have to have our ceremonial chat about trite nonsense that nobody really cares that much about.
That's true. We've got to do that one. We can't forget about that, because if we do, what's the point in living, you know?
Exactly. If there's no bullshit, what's the point?
Exactly. But I think I've got a good one this week, Lewis.
I think you mean the wheel has got a good one this week.
The wheel whispered to me yesterday and was like, hey, Danny, your breath stinks. And I was like, well, I mean, I'm not sure what relevance that has to the impending podcast. And he was like, oh yeah, I've got a good one. Oh, I was like, okay, that's good.
So, yes.
First time live on air.
Yep.
Okay, and it reads.
Yep.
Whose line is it anyway?
The classic comedy show.
Yes.
From way back when.
Yes, it's such a funny fucking show, man.
It is a funny show. Yeah, I think the idea is it's a long time since I watched that. I used to just play reruns on Dave, but I don't think they have for years. It's like an improv show, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, and you know that I love improv, Lewis.
I do.
Yeah, you know that I can improv till the cows come home.
Don't know why
the cows would have left, to be honest. It's like
it's because they were scared of your improv.
Yeah.
They were scared of your daunting ability to improvise.
Yep. It's just the pigs, and I just go to the pigs' die and just scare the shit out of them. But I thought, because I watched a specific one, and it's called Narrate.
Okay.
And it's a film noir type thing, where it's specifically aimed for two guys called Colin and Ryan, and it can be set anywhere, and the audience shouts out a place, and then they just make it up as they go along.
So okay.
So I thought, Lewis, what we could do is
we could do our own Narrate.
Okay, I'm interested. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, look, right now, look, right. Okay. Look, right this second. So, do you know what I'll do? I'll just, if you pick a place, right? I'll get the music up, right?
Okay.
And then we just take it from there and see what happens.
Okay. We're gonna go with, I can't think of any places.
It's going well.
We're gonna go with Euston train station.
Euston train station.
Yes, in London.
Right, okay.
We're going to go with that very specific place.
Right, okay. So I'll start off the narration, right?
Okay.
Right, so have you ever seen Narrate?
No, but I mean, I'm enjoying figuring out about it in this sort of jumping into the deep end method.
Right, okay. So it starts off with the person narrating to the audience what he's doing, and that's that film noir type thing. And then there's a bit of comment, and then you then, in turn, will narrate to the audience about, you know, things that I might not know about. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
an internal
monologue for both characters, and there's a bit interact. Right, okay, so we'll try it.
Okay. Does it matter what name we're using or what? No, it doesn't matter. Just use our actual human names.
It doesn't matter. You can do whatever you want.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, right, here we go. Oh shit, there's an advert.
Oh, in true improv style, something has gone slightly wrong.
Yep. Make sure the volume's up.
Okay, an action. The great haggis of Scotland had been stolen, and I tracked this rogue halfway across the globe, and I finally found him in Euston Station. Hey, you! You! He may have been deaf. I wasn't sure. You!
I'm not deaf. Don't worry, I thought to myself. Cunningly, I had hidden the haggis in a mysterious restaurant, which is hidden deep in the bowels of Euston Station. I thought, there's no way that Daniel Kerr, famed man of mystery, would ever delve deep enough into a carbohydrate-serving restaurant to find the haggis.
What he didn't realise was, he was speaking out loud, and I could hear everything he was saying. Aha! I will go to your very specific directions, and I will retrieve the haggis that you stole 15 years ago.
I watched Danny saunter away down the corridor, confident in his ability to reclaim the haggis for his beautiful motherland. Little did he know that the haggis actually was laced with a bomb, and that upon its being re-stolen from my possession to the national government of Scotland, the bomb would be triggered, but it would only kill the love of Daniel Kerr's life.
He still forgot that he was speaking out loud. And I could hear everything he was saying. So, when I found the haggis and saw a massive spherical shape on top of it, I was like, something might be fishy.
Danny reached into his sporran to get out his bomb defusal kit. And as he sat there, hunched over the restaurant, hunched over the haggis as he was trying to defuse the bomb which I'd so cunningly hid within it, he was presented with a choice. Does he cut the blue wire or the yellow wire?
Well, I'm a Ranger supporter, so the yellow, obviously. The bomb exploded, but luckily, due to the stone in Scottish blood, I survived. And so did the rogue. I don't know his name. Was it Martin Freeman? We'll never know. We'll never know. There has always been an intense hatred between the Scots and the hobbit folk of the Shire. But maybe we could find a way through. This fighting has got to stop. I can't come to the Staffordshire Moorlands and keep stealing oatcakes, and you can't come to Scotland and keep stealing haggises and lacing it with cleverly concealed bombs. It's time that we put our differences aside. What do you say?
I think it is time we put our differences aside. Here, please accept this haggis that is not at all mysteriously shaped, that it might be concealing a bomb. Please accept this haggis as a token of my affection for your country.
He seemed honest enough. I took the haggis, and then I died.
Very good. Round of applause for whatever the hell that was.
God. Yeah, so it's a bit like that. It's like, probably, they probably do an infinitely better.
It's like that, but much better, because we are, if nothing else, morons.
Oh, that was fun. I enjoyed that.
Was quite good, yeah.
Do you want to do another one?
Oh, go on, let's do another one. You pick a locale.
Okay. Let's go with a library. Right.
Okay,
right.
Okay.
You start off the narration this time. Let's switch it up a wee bit, okay?
Okay.
Right, okay. And action.
As I stalked amongst the shelves of the local library, I felt my revolver very heavy in my inside pocket, and I knew that the man I'd been paid to kill was hidden somewhere within this library. Is that him, hunched over the study table? I see all those textbooks in front of him, but he was supposed to be a moron. Could he outsmart me?
I saw the man come in. I don't know why he was talking to himself. This is a library. He shouldn't be talking. He should have respect for the other readers. But I noticed something in his pocket. It could either be a 20pp Magnum revolver or a very big banana. It was anyone's guess. But I would have gone with the latter, had I not been a moron. I got the feeling he sensed that somehow. Hey, you!
As I
What have you got in your pocket?
Hey, friend. I have several things in my pocket, including my wallet. However, at the moment, I'm afraid I'm particularly hungry. I reached into my inside pocket and pulled out the banana. I peeled it and began to eat.
Oh, God.
At that moment, I realized that the librarian had stood up and went,
"Shh! This is a library!"
And I said, "Sorry."
But
I did not apologize. Instead, I bit away more of the banana to reveal that the banana was not a banana. It was instead a gun hiding a banana.
God, this guy.
I ate the rest of the banana and cleared the banana out from the inside of the gun and killed the librarian immediately. How dare she tell me to shh?
Wow, she was 1 week from retiring. What a callous... What a callous man. Say, where are you from?
Me? I'm from the Shire.
The Shire?
Where are you from?
Me? I'm from... I'm from Carlisle.
That doesn't exist.
It does.
No, I don't agree with you. I don't think that is a place.
I could see that he was well-reasoned. And... What... And then he said something to me. Something so spectacular, I couldn't believe it.
Now come on, friend. Let's find out where you're really from, because it sure as hell isn't Carlisle.
I mean, the setup was quite good.
The execution was poor.
I was expecting something a little more bigger than... Let's find out where you're from.
Little did he know that I wasn't going to let him find out where he really came from. I was going to miniaturize a robot with a bomb in his chest and then tape it to a hand grenade in the world's most disappointing series finale.
It was at that moment I realized that, thank the fucking gods, we don't have a show that is based on improv, because it would be cancelled within the first 2 weeks of commissioning. And that's how our story comes to an end. Wow, that's like better than every film noir ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's infinitely superior.
Yeah, we should. God, I can't wait to hear how that sounds. I can't even remember half the things I said.
Neither could I.
I love doing that. That's really fun. I love improv.
That is quite fun, yeah. I do like a bit of improv. I used to do it at like drama festivals and stuff when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, there you go, folks.
There we go. Is that enough bullshit? Do you feel sated?
I feel as if I produced any more bullshit, I'd probably die.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's like you need some shit, don't you? You need to retain some, don't you?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's very true, yeah.
For the next one.
It's good for you, a bit of shit.
Yeah. It's nutritious. Anyway, so... Oh, God. What film are we talking about?
We are talking about the film Get Out, which I believe is a 2014 film?
Yeah. You would think that they'd be really edgy like Mother and have an exclamation mark at the end of Get Out, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
it is a 2017 film. It is a mystery thriller. Well, there we go. Directed by Jordan Peele. And the cast includes people such as Daniel Kaluuya, Allison Williams, Bradley Whitford, who also plays Jake Peralta's dad in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Catherine Keener, and Lakeith Stanfield. So isn't that exciting?
Well, there you go. It was also written by Jordan Peele as well.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. I didn't realise we were doing the dates now, Lewis. Like the year it was released, that puts an awful lot of pressure on me.
I mean, enormous volume, yeah.
I don't know if I can be that accurate, you know. I think there has to be something. There has to be something that we get wrong. God, I'm all shaken after that bomb laced haggis. Okay. Do you have an opening statement?
I do have an opening statement. A visual poem from Jordan Peele. The symbolism and foreshadowing doesn't feel heavy-handed at all, and the casual nature of the racism towards Chris is a huge eye-opener.
Yes. It would be an elaborate Key and Peele sketch if it wasn't so horrifying.
Just agreeing with you. Carry on.
It would be an elaborate Key and Peele sketch if it was if it wasn't so horrifying. A masterful horror film with epic performances that offer a very nuanced look on race relations in the US. Are most comic writers this dark-minded?
Look, I've got this is clever, right?
Wait, okay, yeah.
And now we're in creepy room questions, right? Well, are they?
I think have heard it's like a common thing that a lot of comedians, comedy writers, comedy actors are like very intelligent by comparison to people who do the same thing but aren't quite as funny. And it's also a thing that I think a lot of very intelligent people, typically very intelligent comedians, are depressed as well. So maybe
yeah, because like Todd Phillips wrote the Hangover movies and then farts out Joker. It's like oft, you know.
yeah.
And then Jordan Peele did Us as well, which was another great horror film.
Us was, it was weird as hell.
It was a weird
I quite
film.
Liked it, but
I really liked it.
Yeah. Anyway, have you got any CRQs?
Yeah, I thought we'd neatly transitioned over to that, Lewis.
Well, have you got any more CRQs?
Oh, there we go.
It's
more of a statement than a CRQ.
Oh, go on, hit me.
I hate it when other white people try and seem woke by saying that they voted for Obama and oppose Hitler.
Okay. Yeah, good stuff.
Because that's like, it's not really sort of critiquing, like, you know, far south stereotypical redneck racists. You know, it's the sort of very sort of liberal elite who are more sort of apathetic to it, but will, you know, still say, oh yeah, you know, I would have voted for Obama in a third term if I had the chance, you know. Oh, Hitler, wow, what a dick. You know, it's like, who has that kind of conversation when you meet your daughter's boyfriend for the first time? You've got a photo of Hitler at the
38
Olympic Games, going, ah, Hitler with his Aryan bullshit. It's like, why do you do it?
I suppose it's like being so afraid of being racist that you sort of almost come full circle.
Yeah.
It's that you're like, you're being so anti-racist that the implication is you're trying very hard not to be racist. I don't know, it's not as bad as just out-and-out racism. But like,
it's not as bad, but it's really fucking annoying and embarrassing.
It's just like, and I think it is because you're still othering the person that you claim to just be accepting of. It's like you can't treat them like a normal human being. You have to sort of say, and Obama's great, isn't he? And Hitler's bad. Come and look at this photo I have of him. it's really weird.
Yeah, it is weird. I have a question.
Go on.
Why did Grandpa decide to do his sprinting practice fully clothed in the dead of night? Why did Grandpa make that decision?
I don't know. I think it was more about the visuals, that scene.
Probably, yeah. It was very strange, though.
It was just very unsettling, this man running at full speed towards you and then just turning at the last minute.
Yes, I thought that was quite unsettling.
Yeah, that's true. I have a question which also links to Batman in a weird way.
It always comes back to Batman.
It always does. He's the root of everything. Who built the underground surgical suite and didn't they think it was weird? This comes back to Batman, like that bit from Family Guy. You've got a Lady Susan for your atomic car.
That's something people consider conversation worthy.
Exactly. Did the builders not say, actually, come to think of it, it's a bit weird that they've got like a surgical suite under their house. Maybe I'll mention that to my wife and my friends.
Well, I mean, I imagine that the creepy circle of... Because they seem to have a large circle of white people that are involved in this.
Mm.
I'd imagine that one or two of them would be builders.
Perhaps.
Or
perhaps they did end up...
Or architects or something like that. You know, it's like, I think that he'd probably be like, hey, do you want to build this thing for us? And then I'll transfer your brain into another human being. And, you know, there's probably some builders out there that are like, yeah, sure. You know, it's a big bad world, Lewis. What are you going to do? Get over it.
That's very true. That's very true. It is a big bad world, and I'm going to remain sad about that for the rest of my days.
Do you know what? See, the great thing about this podcast is that you'll go to other places that review films to talk about the themes, to talk about the symbolism involved. But no, we'll talk about... Wait a minute. Who the fuck built that underground? And why does no one else know it? We are so pernickety with our our dissection of stuff. And that's why we're so... And that's why we're the best.
Oh, well, ain't that the truth?
And I've got another pernickety question, if that's all right with you.
Of course.
Where was the hypnosis learned?
Hypnosis school? Or something?
But
maybe it's like a self-taught thing. Or her mum did it and therefore taught it to her or something.
But it's not just that, it's you know, you tap a tea thing and a teacup and then that's you. It's like it's really that powerful, is it? It's like just two taps and then you fall. And then the hypnosis is so surreal that you fall into a sort of consciousness pit where you can't escape. I mean, it's like, it must be, I think it's a very elite thing that only a few people know. So where do you think it comes from?
I don't know, because it seems to only have a use for this thing, and they refer to it as that, the sunken place. They refer to that like, I'll spend my life in the sunken place, and he goes, oh yes, that's what they call it, implying this sunken place technique is part of the brain swapping technique.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah. the symbolism is off the charts.
Yes, like with the deer at the start.
Yes, and it's like the deer's head appears above the mantle where Chris is sitting. He uses cotton to escape. Which is like, you know, it's a thing that slaves in the old South used to pick. The tea as well. Traditionally, that's a very colonial thing that got transported.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
What else? I mean, just the house itself is like, so it looks like a plantation almost.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It just looks like these servants, you know, these poor people have just been made to serve these monsters, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Fun fact about the deer, you know, when the deer's dying and it's making a sort of meh noise,
yeah,
that's actually Jordan Peele.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
They recorded Jordan Peele going meh, meh, and put it over the deer as it was dying, like.
Oh, God. That's quite funny. There's some comedy in it as well, which is something that I don't think, like, if you're a comic writer, you can help, really. But I saw an interview with Jordan Peele, and he said that comedy and horror are very similar.
Yeah, but I think so too.
Because, you know, comedy's just trying to get a laugh, and horror's trying to get a scare.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's so much room for these, you know, big social issues to be explored through them.
Yeah. It's that's actually what has always impressed me in terms of comedy. That's what's always impressed me with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, is how well they handle quite complex big issues. Like, yeah. They dealt with one episode, Terry got stopped for being black, essentially. He was walking through his neighborhood trying to find a little doll or teddy bear or something that is one of his daughters had dropped. And a policeman came up to him and was like, what are you doing here? And he was like, oh, I'm just trying to find my little girl's cow, Teddy. And the policeman was like, whoa, calm down, stop being so aggressive, sort of thing, and like actually placed him under arrest until he said, like, run me through the system, I'm Sergeant Terry Jeffords, that's me. Like, they dealt with things like that in a very good way.
Yeah,
like, it's something that you don't expect from comedy, but like it always is dealt with in a very very good way. Like the previous episode, they were like shouting bone or something at the top of their lungs till they're like, you think me and my husband should have sex? What? And then the next episode they're talking about like a very complex socio-political issue. I do understand what Jordan Peele meant, saying like this comedy is a very, it's a complex thing, and there is a lot of room for everything in it.
Yeah, because it's so subjective. It's you know, it's really anyone's game, and it's like it really just depends on your taste. Would you find it hard to believe that It's Always Sunny has dealt with some really hard hitting political issues very well?
No, not at all. Because I think comedy actors, comedy writers, they are very skilled. Happy to turn their hand to a lot of things.
There was one episode where they dealt with the trans bathroom issue.
Yeah.
And they all sort of like were discussing how people would feel like uncomfortable, and just like they tried their best to accommodate everyone in their sort of, you know, their weird narcissistic way of the, you know, the way the characters are. And then they just came to the conclusion, wait a minute. No one, why should people be comfortable in the toilet? It's not a place to be comfortable. So what we'll do is, and then they leave the bar, and then it just pans up to both the toilets, and the male and female signs have been removed, and it's just a bit of paper on each door saying animal shit house. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's I think that's what a lot of comedy, the reason a lot of comedy deals with these hard-hitting political issues quite well is because it deals with a lot of these hard-hitting political issues. The way to not solve them, but the way to start thinking about them is to like think about them more objectively rather than from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's what comedy does really well, is removes you from the subjective point of view as, oh well, do I want this happening in a bathroom or whatever, and it makes it objective by introducing such a ridiculous idea as writing animal shithouse on your toilet door. It introduces this objective style of thinking almost.
Definitely, and that's why I love it. I've got to say, there is nothing creepier in horror than a group of nice, rich white people in a big house, isn't there? It's just like...
I sort of know what you mean, yeah.
It's like, see, like, you just know immediately. Like, see if this was tailored as, like, a sort of rom-com, right? And there was no horror involved, right? And Chris went to this house. I would be creeped out still by these... You know, people who are nice really just creep me out, because it's like I'm so paranoid that they must have an ulterior motive. They cannot just be decent.
Yeah.
Decent, heartwarming people. You know, that's how they lure you in, Lewis. And then before you know it, you're eating a haggis laced, a bomb laced haggis, you know?
Yeah, or you're getting your brain swapped with some other guy.
Yeah, or that. Either or. Both are likely.
I have a question, and this might have been addressed in the film and I might have missed it. Why was the auction silent? Did that make them feel like they're committing less of a crime?
I thought it was because they didn't want Chris to hear them.
I thought Chris was quite far away, though.
Yeah.
Plus, if Chris had decided to walk back through the woods... and like just stumbled across these people having an auction with a big picture of his face, like it's a funeral or something. He's like, "Oh fucking hell!" And just runs out.
Chris, what are you doing here?
You were meant to be in the woods for another 3.5 minutes.
Oh god. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they were silent. I mean, it's creepy. Maybe that's it. A lot with horror, you can just say, "Well, it looked creepy," so.
Yeah, that's true.
You know how let's like the sort of old white people were sort of going up to Chris, and like this one woman was like feeling his shoulder, because, you know, stereotypically black men are very, very strong, and then and in her racist mind, it's like almost like they're equating him to like an animal, almost.
It's almost like a livestock auction.
Yeah, like that son. What's the son guy? It's like if you trained really hard, you'd be like a beast. It's like, you know, it's like I
can't fathom it. How can you think of that? Mm. How do you think of that of another person?
It's a weird thing.
It's so good because it's so subtle, and it's not, you know, get off my lawn, you know, with a big shotgun and, you know, big Confederate flag. It's the people that I would think that most, you know, most rational people would probably encounter in their lives, just these, you know, people that are desperate to be seen as not racist.
Yeah, but just and I suppose
perpetuate
some degree
the evil that they are fighting against.
And I suppose to some degree it's like you do have people like Confederate flag on the wall who actively hate black people or whatever it might be, but there is also, like, to another degree, like, the number of people that are racist, I would argue, is made statistically more up of less people with, like, a big Confederate flag on the wall, and more of people who, like, just live in their normal house from the day to day, but also they just happen to have sort of vaguely racist beliefs.
Yeah.
Just, like, little things that just affect how they live their day-to-day life. Then, like, they would never dream of going out and going knocking doors down and killing people sort of stuff, but it's also in their head, they're like, yeah, well, you know, I don't really like them packies, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
It's that's what this film sort of shows in a way. These people that want to buy Chris's body and put their brain in him or whatever it is, it's less about, yeah, we actively hate black people and that's why we're targeting black people. It's more like, well, you know, black people and white people are different. Yeah, we should all think about that. And they think that's a normal thing to think. That's a perfectly acceptable thing to think, because they will have never at any point in their lives thought that's a weird thing to think. That's a weird thought to have.
I would argue that it's not, it's everywhere. It's like I'm sure that I think it's just human nature. It's like, if we have a tendency to just like other people that are different from us. And it's like, I'd imagine that there are, you know, black people out there who are just like, all these white, you know, it's just like, I think it's just evolutionary. Almost, it's just like this pernicious instinct to just sort of other yourself from people who are different from you, and it's amplified by the horrible ways that you're brought up. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Yeah, it's racism is just sort of fear as a result of ignorance. In a lot of people, and then that's, it takes a lot to sort of force yourself out of that sort of echo chamber, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, we're very tribal as a species as it is, and then when you've got sort of biases based on race being pushed on you, it's like, you know, I'd imagine it'd be very difficult to sort of crawl out of that.
Sure. Yeah. Right. I have a sort of technical question about the hypnosis.
Go on.
What if they got a guy who had like hearing difficulties or something? Like, I'm presuming that Chris and I've forgotten her name, the girlfriend girl, I'm presuming that Chris and them haven't been going out a long time. Is there a slim chance that Chris could have had like hearing damage from when he was a kid and he can hear everything normally apart from the specific frequency of a teaspoon hitting a teacup? Answer me that one.
I don't know, Lewis.
How am I supposed to know that?
Well, what if they...
But the point I'm sort of trying to get at is, do they have different ways to hypnotise people, or is it entirely just sort of the auditory ting-ting on the cup? Or can they do it visually? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't pick someone with hearing difficulties.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
It's in the same way that you know, that farmers would only pick the best sort of stock, almost. It's like,
yeah,
that sort of horrible sort of you know, thinning of the hair type thing. Ah, well, that one's lame, and that one's, you know, got hearing difficulties, so we'll just, you know, we'll leave that one. You know,
sure.
I'd imagine it'd be something like that. Which would actually make them even more monstrous than they already are. It's not enough that they, you know, lure people in and then take their brains. It's like, no, we only want the best. There's no end to our evil.
Yeah, that's a good point. Do you think that these people would ever do like a celebrity?
No.
You not think?
No, definitely not.
I get it would attract a lot of attention, but could you not make the celebrity, like, sort of hypnotize them and make them think, okay, you're gonna go and live on a farm in Arizona and you're never gonna have any contact with the outside world again? Then the celebrity releases a press statement or whatever saying that, and then they get taken from the ranch in Arizona to this creepy farm where they have a surgical suite in the basement. I have a question.
Go on.
Would they ever do like a double brain swap? Like, say they got a guy who had some kind of undiagnosed cancer or something, and they were thinking, right, well, if we leave Gerald's brain in this guy's body, then in like 6 months this guy's going to be dead from this horrendous cancer. So can we double brain swap? Can we get Gerald's brain from the new body to a second new body?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Gerald on that one.
I would have to ask Gerald on that one. Would you like to take over the questions? My questions are becoming unanswerable.
Do you think they'd do a triple brain swap? Georgina's scene is fucking terrifying.
Oh yeah.
You know, when she's like, it's almost like the person who she was is like sort of just crying to get out, and then like the grandma just sort of suppresses that like you can see it in her eyes that you know this girl who's been, you know, just destroyed, like, individually is just crying to get out and is just suppressed. The clues are all there as well, and it's just thinking back when you figure out the reveal, it's just so horrifying.
Oh yeah, it's when Jake Peralta's dad, who is also the dad of this family, is pointing at pictures on the wall and he says, oh yeah, my mother always loved the kitchen, we keep a piece of her in here, sort of thing. And then it's the implication is he's pointing at the pictures, but then it just pans to Georgina. Yeah. And you're like, oh, I don't like that.
The Armitages have been so good to us. They treat us like family.
That's because you are!
Armitage. You know, that's the make of a urinal.
I can't profess to be up to date on urinal knowledge.
Well, I just remember it. I remember pissing one night when I was drunk, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, Armitage. And then when I was watching this film, I heard the name Armitage, and I was like, oh, there you go. It fits quite well, actually. You know, porcelain, you know, something that looks nice when you walk in, and you just have the instinctual urge to piss on them. You know, it's just... at least it's my instinct, right?
Your instinct is to piss on the Armitages?
Well, yeah.
I mean, my instinct is to put them in jail, to be entirely honest.
Well, can you do both? Can I get a quick...
can you get a quick wee in there?
A quick piss before they get carted off. You know, just...
I'll see what I can do, then.
Officer, just a quick one. He's right there. I'll be 2 seconds. I will be 2 seconds. Give me 2 seconds. No, no, no. Come on now, please. 2 seconds.
I have a question. Do you think the Armitages would allow people to request a race? Do you think it has to be African American, or could they say, actually, no, I want a Taiwanese person, or whatever it might be?
I don't know. See, like, the question. If they're so, because they're racist, right? Look, they're not racist in the sense that they don't want anything to do with any other race.
Mm.
They just sort of want to assimilate them, so they're not racist enough that they would be disgusted being in another person's body of a different colour.
Mm.
So maybe they do different skin tones.
Maybe. But I'll have to write a catalogue. There's a catalogue. God.
Which race do you want to assimilate into this week? That would be the creepiest advert that came out.
That's something that you would see, you know, on those all-night shopping channels. You'd be trying to stay awake, right? And
yeah.
You'd just sort of, and then that would come on, and you'd be like, what the fuck is that? And then it would be gone, and you would wonder all your days whether it was real.
Mm. I was in A&E while...
And you saw it.
No, I didn't see that advert. But there was one for like a drone, like a quadcopter type thing. And right. It was just, it's the most surreal thing, watching late night shopping channels in the late night. I get what you mean about what if you saw a commercial for a brain swapping surgery in come to our ranch in Washington State and you'll have your brain swapped whatever it might be.
Was it in Washington?
I think it might have been upstate New York.
Right, because Chris's second name is Washington.
Oh.
I believe. Yeah.
I think because Chris lives in New York, or at least that's what I took from it. And then they just drove to this house, so I'm thinking upstate New York makes sense.
I love Rod.
Rod was very cool.
He was so funny.
Mm. Oh, that TSA tingles.
He was in
Transformers as well. And Transformers is a fucking god awful film. But like
he was hilarious in it. Like they were like taken by the FBI and there was like a plate of donuts in the middle of the table and he was like, okay, Maggie, look. The thing that they want you to do is that if you don't touch the donuts, you're guilty. I ate the whole plate. The whole plate.
They watched that scene and then I think there was like a cut to something else and cut back to them in this interrogation room and it was like he had both it's like an anti-heartburn and anti-something else. He had like loads of different drugs on the table that he clearly asked for. It's just like,
yeah.
I just ate a dozen donuts. I need like anti-heartburn and I need like anti-indigestion and like, oh.
And then immediately when the first question is asked,
he just breaks down and goes, she did it! She did it! She's the one you want!
Oh, Transformers. Don't you just love them?
I mean, it's just... Everyone looked dirty in that film.
Yeah, I sort of know what you mean.
I mean, it just... Everyone was sweaty. Everyone... It's just lens flares fucking everywhere. You know, explosions left and right. God-awful racial stereotypes. You remember those two cars that were just, like... stereotypical African-American pimps.
Yeah. That had gone straight over my head ages ago. Yeah,
and they had gold teeth and things. Like, oh my God. That's like just... What studio exec looks at that and just goes, yeah, that's cool. You know, that's fine.
We like that. We'll have a bit of that.
Put a PG rating for that one, you know. Fucking hell, man.
Daniel Kaluuya should have won an Oscar. For his performance in this.
Yeah, I think he probably should.
Without a doubt.
I've just got to get that out there.
Just the scene when he's talking about his mum and he's getting hypnotised. That is just amazing. And
it is.
Daniel Kaluuya was on Skins and just like to see him doing this absolutely masterful performance is just... It's fucking amazing, to be honest.
But he's...
What is it? He's fraught. He's English, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is.
He is English, and I love Skins, and then like, I saw him in it, and then he obviously is in Get Out, and it's just like
I think I saw him in
Stephen Graham. Do you know Stephen Graham?
I'm not sure I do.
He's a Liverpudlian actor, and he was in The Irishman, and like, both Daniel and Stephen can do these like, impeccable American accents.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a real respect for people who can do good accents.
I think I saw Daniel Kaluuya in an old episode of Doctor Who. I think it was just somebody that was on the Powell estate. Like, he was just like a face in the background or something, just for 5 seconds. But I was just oh my god!
I think he was in the, you know, one of the specials, the Easter special, where David Tennant gets trapped on the other side of the portal with the bus. He was on the bus, I believe.
Yeah, he was in that, wasn't he?
He was, Well, there you go, small world.
Who knew? What did they do with the old brain?
Bin it? Keep it.
I think get Chris's brain, chuck it in a medical waste bin or something.
Maybe. Keep it as a trophy, I don't know.
Yeah. Pickle it, preserve it in a... eat it, Christ.
Well, I wouldn't put it past them. It's like eat it. They're not crazy.
Yeah, they sort of are crazy, yeah.
They'll take the brain out and switch entire identities and you know, effectively kill the person that they've kidnapped. But they're not insane.
By the way, something I just realised. The reason that Charles Boyle's dad wants to be in Daniel Kaluuya's body is so that he can, like, have sight again, and he can...
take pictures.
Yeah, take pictures. But if we know that camera flashes are something that sets off takes this person out of the sunken place, then wouldn't they... Is that not a bad career choice for somebody who's been get-outed?
Yeah, well, he's an art dealer, isn't he? He's like, he sort of looks at art and then just sort of... So maybe, I don't know, maybe he, but it's only for like a couple of seconds, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe, but then they have to hypnotise him again, so that he goes back into himself.
He could ask for Chris's input.
Yeah, maybe. Like, Chris, what do you think of this?
Hey, Chris, what do you think of this? Get out!
Kill me!
Yeah, I thought so. Okay, yeah. We'll go with that then. Didn't they film this in like 28 days? I'm sure you told me that.
Oh, I might have told you that. I'm not sure. I think you might be right with that. Let me Google that.
Are you Googling it? Okay.
Tape.
This is about No Time to Die for some insane reason. How long did it take them to film Get Out? God, this is just like a... I love Google, but it's also kind of crap.
Yes.
Production development filming. 23 days.
Wow!
Principal photography began on February 16th. Shooting took place in Alabama for 3 weeks, followed by Barton Academy. Took place all over Alabama over the course of 23 days, and principal photography ended after 23 days.
That is ridiculous.
That is crazy.
To film... Oh my god. Think about how hard they must have worked, Lewis.
Oh god, yeah.
Like 7 to 7 every night. Like every single night it must have been.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Oh yeah.
It takes us 3 months of 4 o'clock club. And they did it in 23 days, this masterpiece.
That is kind of crazy, isn't it? I'm not entirely sure how to respond to that, but yeah.
Oh my god. Well, Matt, absolute respect for that. 23 days. It's not even a month.
No, it isn't.
Let's film this masterpiece and win an Oscar in less than a month.
Yeah,
can you imagine going to work with that attitude? It's like, oh my god. That's amazing. The sunken place is my worst nightmare.
The sunken place is kind of the worst nightmare situation, isn't it?
I would hate to ever experience anything like that. Just that you can just see the outside world, and you, no matter how hard you try, you just can't reach it. That's, oh god, it gives me shivers. Fucking
yeah,
terrifying.
That is horrible. It's yeah, it's horrible. It's the idea that somebody else is driving your body, and you have no control over what happens. You're just a passenger along for the ride, sort of thing.
That's why it's so, because it's the loss of your own identity. It's the loss of identity that makes it so horrific. It's like what do you call it? That film. Have you ever seen Rosemary's Baby?
I haven't seen Rosemary's Baby.
It's almost like a sort of modern successor to those sort of cult like films. You know. Oh God, it's horrifying.
It is horrifying. I think something I was quite impressed by in this film was that none of it felt complicated. I think the secret of very good horror is at no point do you question that these people have got the ability to swap people's brains over. Yeah. You just, from the outset, you just sort of accept it. You're just like, yeah, okay. At no point does it seem weird or confusing. You just accept it. You're just like, yeah, okay, this is cool.
Definitely. And Rose, her performance was excellent as well.
Oh, God, yeah. What do you think it was all about? That bit at the end where she was eating, was it Fruit Loops or something? She was like, had a little tub of Fruit Loops and had a glass of milk alongside it instead of just pouring cereal and then milk on top.
I think it's just to hammer home that these people are not human beings.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that they don't consider human life important at all. And it's just, you know, another weird, creepy way of showing that.
Yeah.
Did you see the alternate ending?
No, what's that?
So the alternate ending is that Chris actually goes to jail.
Yes, I think I might have seen it.
For the deaths and things like that, and he gets framed essentially. But Jordan Peele decided not to go down that route because he wanted to give a sort of bit of hope at the end of the film, and it's like, no, this isn't. I don't want my message to be cynical. I want it to be as horrible as things can be and are. It's perfectly plausible to sort of get past it.
Yeah,
and come out better for it.
Are you happy with that ending, or would you have preferred the darker ending?
I don't know. I probably, if I was doing it, I'd probably have gone for the darker ending because I'm just so horrible. But no, I think he is right. I think it's like it does more for the audience if they come out feeling a bit happier rather than just, you know, depressed. As horrible as it is, you know, we can still do things to stop this, you know, type thing.
Yeah, it's I would have gone with the happy ending probably. I'm never much like sad endings.
I love sad endings. They're so great. Have you ever seen The Mist?
I have not seen The Mist. Is it based on the Stephen King book?
Yeah. Mm. Spoilers for The Mist. sorry, Lewis.
No, I don't care.
So they fight. They get out, and he has his family with him, and the mist is still there, and these horrible Lovecraftian creatures walking around, and he just decides, look, it's time to just end this. And he kills his entire family.
Fucking hell.
In the car, and then the mist clears, like, right after, and all the creatures are gone.
Okay, that doesn't seem like a nice ending.
No, it wasn't the original ending of the book, but Stephen King liked it so much that he was like, yeah, but he doesn't like The Shining. Interesting. I have another question. I'm on a roll. Why does no one ever leave horrific situations in horror films?
Yeah, that's true.
I would just take one look at that house and been, right, I'm fucking out of here. Fuck this.
I suppose until sort of partway through the film, Chris is still in a position of like, I really want to impress these people. I really like this girl and I really want to impress her parents. And he's still in that point.
Yeah.
I suppose that's why. He turns up and he thinks, this is creepy and weird and I don't like it, but maybe that's just a normal point of view from thinking, these people I've never met before and I'm in their house. He's also nervous about just being there, so maybe that's something that is sort of a contributing to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, to be fair, this film doesn't really have a lot of it, but there are just horror films where it's just like you have ample opportunity to leave and you don't.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, and see, when that happens, it's hard for me to care whether they die.
Yeah, it's the idiot paradox.
And they've always got left feet, don't they? It's like they can't run properly either.
It's like when somebody runs away from something that's falling over, but they run down the length of it instead of taking one step to the side. Yeah. For God's sake.
Oh, God. Do you have any other questions?
I don't think I do have any other questions, I'm afraid. I keep having things pop into my head and then disappear.
Wouldn't he have noticed them all stop talking when he went up the stairs?
Yeah, you would have thought so, wouldn't you? I suppose it does just look creepy, though.
Yeah, that's...
It goes back to the... That's the old horror film excuse of... Yeah, I mean, scary. It looks creepy, it looks scary, it looks weird, yeah.
Yeah.
I think this does fulfil my trifecta of requirements for what true horror is. It's a horrible thing happening in a horrible setting for a horrible reason. I think that's what you need to make good horror, and that's what this is. It's a horrible thing, a weird brain swap body taking thing, happening in a horrible place, in this creepy ass house in the woods, full of these terrifying, conscienceless people, and happening for a horrible reason. These people are just very selfish. They don't value human life, and he just wants to see again so he steals Chris's body. Yeah. Like,
and they don't steal other white people because they still see black people as inferior. Mm. Which just, it's like, you would think if we don't care who we take, we'll take anyone, but no, it's specifically different races that they want.
Yeah.
Because they see them as almost like cattle.
Yeah,
and
it's
fucking, oh God, it's evil.
Mm. This film was an instant classic when it came out, and it's like,
how long did Jordan Peele write this? And then when he wrote it, he must have had, and he directed it, so he must have had everything planned out. He must have prepped beyond prepped to get this film made in 23 fucking days. That is amazing.
Yeah. I don't know how long it normally takes to get a film made, but 23 days certainly seems like no time at all to make a film like this.
I would have thought like a year.
Yeah, yeah.
It's normally like a year, like editing and all.
Mm-hmm. Well, 23 days is like principal photography, and then it's editing as well.
Yeah.
So maybe it did take a lot. I don't have no idea.
Well, how many days was it for us for the 4 o'clock? Isn't it like 54 days or something like that?
Usually it's sort of, 13, 14 weeks, so it ends up being about 50 or 54, 55 days.
Right, I'll just search how long it takes for principal photography in an average film.
Okay. And I'll play some Muzak while we wait.
Okay. Alright, I've got it.
Oh, good stuff. I don't have to come up with any more melodies on the fly.
Thank fuck. A full-length feature film could take up to 3 months to shoot, while a half-hour television series episode can take as little as 4 days. Principal photography typically lasts between 4 to 10 weeks. So it was below that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was right to be impressed then.
Yeah, that is impressive.
Yeah. Fucking hell. That is amazing. Well, I think I'm out of notes, Lewis.
I am also out of notes. I am looking at my two-page spread. Yeah, I'm out of notes.
Oh, actually, I've got one. What's your favourite scene?
Probably where Chris is being hypnotised. I really like that scene.
Yeah.
It's the hopelessness and the helplessness that he is so afraid of is just coming true all over again. It's a waking nightmare for him, sort of thing.
Definitely.
Excellent.
What about you?
Oh, it's got to be when Rod is on the phone to Rose. And she's just like, oh my God, help! You know, just completely faking it. And he just knows, he's like, this bitch is lying.
Yeah, yeah.
It's terrifying and very funny at the same time.
Yeah. But other than that, I'm out of notes.
Okay, well, there we go. You got a closing statement?
I do.
Hit me with it.
I do. A truly horrific exploration of the attempted theft of identity and how those who may appear righteous enforce the wrongs they detest.
Mm. A truly horrible story in a truly horrible setting. It speaks very well about themes of hopelessness and one's inability to act when paralysed with fear. An instant classic. I think this is one sort of for the history books in a way. This is one they'll be teaching at, like, in a media studies course or a film and television course or whatever. This is a good example. It's like, look at all these things this film did so well.
I would certainly hope so.
From the casting to the cinematography to the script writing to the horror, it was all just done so incredibly well.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, hey.
Well, should we do some shilling?
Yeah, let's do a bit of shilling, shall we? Shill.
Shill. I'm on Instagram, Alhiram. I'm on Facebook at Daniel Kerr. I'm on Twitter at Kerzo2000. What are you on, Lewis?
I am on Instagram at Lewis_Brindley. I am on Twitter at Lewis_Brindley4. I have a Facebook page called Lewis Brindley. So yeah, have a look at stuff and things. We are hosted by Podomatic, who are a podcast hosting people. We are also on Spotify, we are on Apple Podcasts, we are on Deezer. We also have a YouTube channel where we are sort of trying to upload things as quickly as we can. We've got a backlog of approximately 10 million episodes of the podcast to get up there. However, we are working on it, you can rest assured.
Yes, and we also have a PayPal donate button, mm-hmm. and we also have Patreon. So anything you can spare, you know, we won't take your brain out. And give us the cash.
We absolutely love doing this. And if you can help us financially justify it, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to start going on diamond heists if you don't help us out.
Okay, good stuff.
Yeah. Well, Lewis,
I believe that's it, my friend.
Yeah. So what the hell are we doing next week?
Well, if I remember correctly, is it the Oscar-winning film Parasite?
It is the Oscar-winning film Parasite.
It's the Oscar-winning film Parasite.
Yeah, your memory is impeccable.
It is.
Impeccable.
Unparalleled.
Yes. Unparasite. God. It's early.
It is not early. It is essentially... It's 20 past 11.
Well, it's early for me. Okay. Well, that's us. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you. We really enjoy this. We hope to hear you, listen to you. Have you listened to us this episode next week? We'll talk about Parasite. We also do The Whispering Into the Voids. Check them out. We're talking about Better Call Saul at the minute. It's a fantastic show. And we like to think that we offer our two pence. Just so gently.
I think you're overselling yourself there, Lewis.
Yes, we offer our one pence.
Yes. A shilling.
Yes. Ah. Hey, yes. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. See you next week.
See you next week.